I was just sharing at the break that when I've been 6 weeks with an interpreter, so now that I get to stand up and just speak English and talk as fast as I want, I hope I'm not going too fast. But that's really enjoyable for me just to be able to share and to move along. Let's look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Starting at verse 18. For the word of the cross is to those who are perishing foolishness, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the cleverness of the clever I will set aside. Where is the wise man? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God, God was well pleased through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. For indeed Jews ask for a sign and Greeks search for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, to Jews a stumbling block, to Gentiles foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. For consider your call, brethren, there were not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong, and the base things of the world, and the despised. God has chosen the things that are not, that he might nullify the things that are, that no man should boast before God. They tell a story in China about a man going every day to the well to get water. And one pot has thousands of cracks and the other pot has no cracks. And every time he gets home, the pot with the cracks are empty. And one day the little cracked pot cried out to its master and he said, crush me. He said, why should I crush you? He said, I got too many cracks. You fill me and by the time we get home, there's no water in me. But the other pot's always full. And the master smiled and he laughed and he said, but you're my favorite pot. I picked you because of your cracks. Did you notice from the well to the house there's flowers planted all along the road? I planted those and I picked you because you're the one that waters them. Power is perfected in my weakness. The thing I thought was putting me out is actually bringing me in. I want you to see that before we move to the next point. And the first thing is this, is to see that in your life, everything has been perfect when your goal is the revelation of Christ. And that this world is perfect in that regard. And that God has numbered every hair of your head. Now, the next point we want to make is, why do I act the way I act? Why do I feel the way I feel? Why do I have the struggles that I have? What's unique about my struggles? In Lamentations 3:40, it says this, examine and probe your ways and turn to the Lord. Now, there's a lot of people who will examine and probe your ways, but they'll never turn you to the Lord. Then there's people that will turn you to the Lord, but they won't examine and probe your ways. They're just as annoying. Because you try to tell them what your problem is, and they just say, pray about it. Well, I must know what self is if I'm to deny self. Luke 9:23, take up the cross and deny yourself. How can you deny it if you don't know what it is? So it's important to understand what your self-life is, so there's definition to the terms that we use every day in Christianity. What is my self-life? How do I understand it? Now, the advantage of knowing yourself is so you can take up the cross and deny it. I was talking to a girl who was involved in a variety of sins, and she'd given her life to Christ, and she'd moved on, and she was really going well. And after 3 years, she returned to my office. And she said, I think you need to go deeper into my history, deeper into my past, understand more about me. I said, well, that's intensive therapy. She said, that's what I need, intensive therapy. I said, well, that'll be about 10 hours, and it's $150 an hour. Do you have $150 an hour? She said, no. I said, well, here's what we'll do. If you'll work for me 10 hours for free, then I'll do your counseling for free for 10 hours. She said, oh, that's great. I said, well, show up tomorrow morning, and I'm going to give you a map and a stick. I want you to follow the map and go out of town to the dairy. And you'll know where the dairy is. Jump out of your car, walk along the fence until you find a nice big cow patty, the one you like the best. Jump over the fence and examine it for 10 hours, and I'll pay you. All you have to do is poke at it, flip it, smell it, taste it, do whatever you want, but you got to stay at that one cow patty for 10 hours. I said, what will you know at the end of the 10 hours? He said, I won't know anything. I knew it was a cow patty, now I just smell like one. I said, exactly. When I was a little boy on the farm, and my grandmother sent me out on a hot Kansas day to go get my grandfather in the feedlot, I went running out with no shoes, and halfway there, I felt something green and hot come between my toes. Now, we're not that bright in Kansas, but I was smart enough to figure this out. I knew what that was, and I didn't want to step in it anymore. And even when I go to this day, I walk around the cow patties. The advantage of understanding yourself isn't so you roll in it, so you dwell on it, so you obsess on it, and you have an event in your life then continue to affect you your whole life. The reason for understanding self is so I can walk around it, so I can deny it and not be in it, and I know what it is for me. So I'm going to use a model of man from 1 Thessalonians 5:23. And Paul talks about the spirit and the soul and the body, that God made you out of the dust of the earth. That's your body. He breathed his spirit into you, and you became a living soul with a mind and a will and an emotions. Why did God create you? What's he all about? Well, 1 John 4:8 tells us that God is love, so he created you to be the object of his love. He loves you. And to make sure that you would come to him, he put in your spirit certain spiritual needs that only he can meet, and the desire to be loved by God. So the day you're born, you begin to be driven toward him to meet your deepest needs. Those are the needs of love and acceptance and assurance and security and significance. But we try to get those needs met out of other people. We try to milk it out of them. And as my father said to me, it is possible to milk a mouse, but I'm not sure it's worth all the effort or you get enough to drink. 90% of the arguments and disagreements and dissatisfaction that you have with the people around you will center on those needs not being met. You didn't meet my need for love. You didn't accept me. You didn't give me assurance. You didn't give me security. You didn't make me feel significant. Do you ever look in the back of the paper where they have the people wanted ads? Or someone's looking for somebody to date? Have you ever read those things? They're just amazing. Looking for a man that's handsome. Looking for a man that's educated. Looking for somebody who's smart, that likes travel, that likes fun. And they go through all that list of what they're looking for. Do you know what I'm talking about? What do they want? They want their deepest needs met. We have a craving to have those things met, and since we're born dead to God, we look to others to meet those needs instead of him. And we get upset with them when they don't meet the needs. I was explaining to a lady here in Oklahoma, and it was really funny, that in her marriage, her and her husband kept looking to each other to meet the needs that only God can meet. I said, sister, you're drinking at a well where there is no water. Your husband can meet needs, but not those needs. Only God meets them. She said, I think I understand what you're saying. Our marriage is like two ticks and no dog. I said, you've got it. That's it. It's two ticks and no dog. Because these needs are my deepest needs, I can't move on until they're met. So the first problem that we have being born dead to God is that we're completely self-centered. You know the only problem in my family is that everyone's too selfish to just think about me? That's what frustrates me. They're too selfish to think about me. I'm selfish. I want my needs met, and I want someone else to meet those needs for me. And if they don't meet them, I get upset. The first problem is I'm completely self-centered. Then there's a second problem. My mind, will, and emotions are like an automobile. Automobiles are created for drivers. If you see a car coming toward you with no driver in it, what are you going to do? Yeah, get out of the way. We say that sanity is the mind, will, and emotions in touch with reality. Insanity is the mind, will, and emotions out of touch with reality. So if God is the ultimate reality and you're born dead to God in your spirit, then what's your condition at birth? You're insane. Well, you always knew your husband was, but you weren't sure that you were. But you're actually born insane. And why do we make that point? Because most people never judge their thoughts or their emotions. When you have a thought, where does that thought come from? Is it Satan's thought? Is it God's thought? Is it your mind? Is it your will? Is it your body? Where do the thoughts come from? And we don't judge our thoughts. It's interesting when you begin to ask people about judging their thoughts. Satan will always speak to you in a first-person singular voice with an Oklahoma accent. So he'll never walk up to you and say, you're a failure, you're worthless, you're useless. Instead, he'll come behind you in a voice that sounds just like yours, and he'll say, you're a failure, you're useless, and you're worthless. And we turn around and we don't see anyone there, and we start to believe what we're hearing. And one thing that Satan would love us to believe is that temptation equals desire. Does a temptation equal your desire? Do temptations reveal you? Do they? Okay, if temptation doesn't reveal your heart, then what would you think of a woman that gets up Sunday morning and says, oh, I've got something I want to share from the platform. I had a funny temptation this week. It was an odd temptation. Just want to share it with all of you. All week long, I was thinking about calling the pastor and asking him to run off with me. Just a temptation. You know, you have them. Have them all the time. And then she just turns around and sits down. What do people think about that? We actually believe that temptation is a revelation of the heart. The temptation reveals my desire. And as soon as you believe that temptation reveals your heart, you'll now focus on the temptation and become obsessed with it. This pen isn't very big, but if you pick it up and move it toward your eyes and move it closer and closer and closer, pretty soon it's the whole room. When I believe temptation equals desire, I'll pick it up and move it all the way here until that's all that I see. And then the enemy will whisper this to you. Well, go ahead and do it so you can be set free. Go ahead and do it so you can be over it. A woman came to my office and she stepped in and threw her baby in my arms. She was weeping and fell to the floor. I said, what's wrong? She said, I can barely get in the car all the way while I'm over here or driving over here. I'm having the thought, open the car door and push him out. Open the car door and push out the baby. I said, well, that can't be right. I mean, if it was a teenager, maybe. But just a little baby, it can't be right. That's Satan. That's the enemy. And your reaction against it is proof that it's not you. But you're not judging your thoughts. I was having my hair cut. I got there at 9 o'clock at night. It was Cuts Deluxe. The place was just emptying out. I went running in. I said, can you cut my hair? The lady said, yes. So I sat down. She's tying up the apron. I said, how many people's hair have you cut today? 28. I said, wow, 28 people. You cut 28 people's hair. She goes, yeah. I said, well, when you've cut that much hair, do you ever just have this thought to take your scissors and drive them into his neck? You know, she stopped and said, yes, I do. I said, well, you're not having it now, are you? I said, that's the enemy's voice. We believe that temptation equals desire. You ever been standing on the edge of a bridge and you hear a voice that says, jump? I know some of you have been on the edge of the bridge and you hear a voice that said, push. We don't judge our thoughts, and if we don't judge our thoughts, we probably are not judging our emotions. You know the one sure way to know you're saved? It's if you've ever wondered if you were. That temptation, that thought, and that feeling doesn't work on an unsaved person. About half the people I see aren't believers. I haven't had one come in yet wringing their hands saying, well, I don't know if I'm saved or not. Can you tell me if I'm saved? Do you judge your emotions? And here's the problem with emotions. You can have an emotion such as guilt, and it can have at its source something that's true or false, and it feels exactly the same way. The first time you confessed your sin to God, you were confessing it to him, and he heard you, and he forgave you. Every time you've confessed it since then, you only confessed it to the enemy. Do you know that God's bored with your sin? That he remembers it no more? When I get ready to buy something, I'm a comparison shopper. I have to compare everything. And I have to talk to Betty about it over and over and over again. And if it's going to be a lawnmower, I tell her about all the lawnmowers. I got all the brochures for lawnmowers. Look at these lawnmowers now. Which one should I get? And the worst thing that can happen to you is to buy one and then find it cheaper next week, isn't it? You hate that after you do all the research. Well, the first day she listens, and she acts interested. I know she's not, but she acts interested. The second day she listens a little less. The third day she walks off. Is it because she doesn't love me or she's bored with the topic? If you're going to keep replaying to God your sin, and you lay in bed at night and you get that chill and that feeling of embarrassment and you go, how could I do that and how could I be that stupid? And you're going to confess that all over to him again. He's eventually going to leave, in a sense, not because he's mad with you and he's cut you off, but because he's sick of the topic. Can we get on? Can we move on and judge our emotions? Now, here's the third thing. I'm born dead to God in the Spirit. That makes me self-centered. It also makes me insane. And the third thing is this now. I don't know who I am. I was created for God and I don't have God. God is supposed to tell me who I'm in, who I am, but I don't know who I am. I've lost my identity. And so I do the next logical thing, which is to go to other self-centered, insane people and say, would you please tell me who I am? And then spend the rest of your life trying to change it. I was in a mental hospital visiting. And I went up to this fellow and I said, I'm Mike Wells, I'm your counselor. And he goes, you're not Mike Wells, you're a rabbit. If I say thank you and hop out the door, who's crazier, him or me? I'm crazier than he is. But we've let other people, through their overt, their obvious, or their covert, their unknown behaviors, tell us who we are. There's two ways that I can tell you who I don't like you. One is to just say I don't like you. The other is to pack up my things and leave and not talk to you. Either way, I'm giving you the message that I don't like you. In our self-centered, insane condition, looking to the adults around us to meet the needs that only God could meet anyway, so it's my fault for looking there. They give me messages about myself. So what if there was a divorce? What if your father abandoned you? What does that say about you? What if you had a physical deformity and people made fun of you? What if you had a nickname? What if you didn't have shoes? What if you weren't wealthy? What if you felt like you were out? What kind of message do people give you about yourself? And it's our fault for receiving it and now having to spend the rest of our lives living to people. Do you know I spent too much of my life living to people instead of just loving people? But I live to them to have them undo messages that I got about myself from other self-centered and insane people. Let me show you how that works. In this circle, put the impression that you want to leave with a room full of people. So we're going to leave here tonight, and what would you want people to say about you? What would you like your neighbor to say? Well, since it's a room full of Christians, I'd like people to think that we're spiritual, that we're knowledgeable, that we're success, that we're a good mom, that we're a good wife. Doesn't hurt any to be attractive. All of those kind of things. That's the impression we'd want to leave. But at your very worst moment, how do you describe yourself? What you are at your worst moment is your true condition. At your worst moment, when you're laying in bed, Satan will not pass that opportunity. He'll come and he'll appear next to your bed and he'll begin to whisper. And what kind of things does he whisper to you? I'm a failure. I'm worthless. I'm unacceptable. I'm ugly. I'm fat. I'm all those things. Now imagine I said to all of you single women here tonight, there's a fellow I want you to go out with. You go, what's he like? Well, he's worthless, he's unacceptable, he's a failure, he's stupid, he's ugly, and he's fat. Oh, can I have his number? Is that what you would say? Would you want to be around that kind of person? And I know that no one would really like me at my worst, because if you knew me like I knew me, you'd hate me like I hate me. And so what I'm going to do is run to my emotional sewing machine, zip up a success suit, and I'm going to put it on every morning and zip it all the way here so you only see the successful mic and you don't see the real mic underneath. And all day long I have to live with that suit. Now, if I could convince you tonight you were a rabbit, how long could you hop? You might hop to the door and you might hop to the parking lot and you might get down a ways, but pretty soon you're in too much pain and you can't hop anymore. And what you have to do is stand up. When you leave the house and you zip on your success suit, you hop all day long for everyone around you. And you hop and you hop and you hop. I'm amazed at how people can treat strangers. I'm amazed at how I treat strangers. And all day long, I hop. And when I get home at night, what am I ready to do? Stand up. Rip off the success suit. So the world gets the cream and my family gets the crud. Now, I know that PMS is a reality. Believe me, I know that PMS is a reality. I had them say the scientists were upset because when they discovered PMS, the name they wanted to give it had already been taken. Mad cow disease. Now, the pastor told me that. I don't know. I know it's real. I know there's physiological change. I know there's things that take place. I understand that. What I don't understand is the woman goes to school, she drops off her kids, she says hi to the teacher, she goes to the market, she talks to the lady at the checkout, she says hi to her, she stops and sees another friend, says hi to her, and then when her husband comes home at night, she rips his head off and says it's PMS. I know she doesn't feel well, but the thing is, she'll put the effort into hopping for others because there's still the veiled hope that others would meet my need and undo the messages I got about my identity. And I've already been with you long enough to discover that you're not going to undo them. In fact, you might even intensify them. Because you married me because you thought I was wonderful, and then you started telling me I was the negatives. And now I want to avoid you. When we live like this, we're constantly controlled by somebody somewhere, on the positive or the negative. And if we're trying to cover this up and maintain an image, I've been there. It's a miserable place to be. A friend of mine kept getting promotions in Australia, and every time he would get a promotion, he got a promotion because of his desired impression. So every promotion put more pressure on him. Because now it won't be long before they find out what he's really like. And they kept giving him more promotions. And finally the owner came in one day. He had something behind his back. He put it on the table. He said, "What is it?" And he spun it around and it said, "President." And my friend said, "That does it. I quit. I can't take it anymore. Because I don't want you to see what I am here." That's why many of you in your life, when you were teenagers, if I would have seen who you were dating, I would have looked at you and said, "Why are you down dating like that?" People hate contrast. I remember being in high school, I decided I wasn't going to smoke anymore. The cigarettes I had to pay for yesterday were free today. Cigarette smoking won't send you to hell, it just makes you smell like you live there. I decided I wasn't going to drink. The drinks that were free I had to pay for yesterday were free today. Why is that? People hate a contrast. And if you feel worthless and unacceptable and unlovable, you will not date someone with worth. Because it puts too much pressure on you. So you'll go out and look for somebody who's more worthless. And we don't have as much pressure. How did I get this inner image? What I am at my worst? And we don't like it being revealed either. In fact, when what I am is revealed, I'm going to blame you. You made me feel worthless. That's not true. I've always felt worthless and your behavior just revealed it. You make me feel stupid. No, I don't. You've always felt stupid, and my behavior just revealed what you've always felt. If all of you say to me tonight, "You know, Mike, I really think you're a woman and you look better in a dress," it doesn't bother me. I just go on laughing because I know what I am. I'm not a woman. It doesn't bother me. If somebody tells me I'm stupid and I know that I'm not, why would it bother me? It bothers us because we're trying to cover up this image. And we got identity messages about ourselves. And our self-centered, insane condition. Other people told us who we were, and now we have to live our lives living to them, trying to change what I feel that I am. It works its way out into our problems. And let me give you an example. There's a lot of people we can pick on, but it's always fun to pick on the unrighteous with the bad deeds of the flesh. Because if you've got bad deeds of the flesh, we'll put you out of the church. If you've got good deeds of the flesh, you're self-righteous and proud, we'll probably make you an elder or leader or something. There's hope. But we always like to pick on the unrighteous, and so we'll just pick on the unrighteous again. And let's say that someone is talking to me, and their problem is alcohol. That's the problem. Well, if alcohol is the problem, they need to take those little pills that make you a sick drunk. They don't cure you, they just make you a sick drunk. Or we can put you on an island where there is no alcohol, because alcohol is the problem. But if you talk to a person and say, is alcohol your problem? They rarely say it is. They'll say, there was an event that made me drink. My wife said that she wished she hadn't have married me, that she'd made a mistake marrying me. Well, most women have thought that, but most haven't said it to their husbands. So his wife said it to him. And there are counselors that would say to you, well, you're right, the alcohol isn't the problem. The problem is your wife, and you need to find a different woman, and one that's always nice and always gentle and always kind. Now, where does that woman live? We're not perfect. We're in flesh. We live in flesh. But you need to find somebody like that that's perfect, that won't stir you up and make you drink. Whenever you have a problem, whatever your problem is, you're in rebellion, and the one thing that justifies rebellion is anger. Have you noticed that whenever you're doing the thing you shouldn't do, you're always angry? Whenever you're in rebellion, you're angry? If you have teenagers and they're angry, just get ready for what's happening this weekend, because they're going to rebel. Something's going on. I like to give the example, and I got my little white box with me of vitamins that Betty gives me. And I'm always taking vitamins. I have a lot of vitamins. I said, the woman could be killing me. I don't know what they are. There's vitamins. There's things you spin with vitamins in it. There's white things with vitamins. I've got so many vitamins, I am a vitamin. And then she always has me on a diet. So you're on a diet and you take your vitamins. And in the morning, you get the little bit of peach and you can have milk on it. She calls it milk. It can't be milk. I know how they make it. They take a cow and pass it in front of water, and then they call that milk, but it's not milk. It's some kind of the Blue John, we called it on the farm. So you get the Blue John, and you get your peach, and you eat the peach. Then you come home at lunch, and it's another fistful of vitamins, and the other half of the peach. Peach day again. And then one piece of lettuce. You can't even find the other side. So you have your lettuce, and you have your peach. And then I go to work, and I'm sitting there working, and I look up. 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock, half price sale at Dunkin' Donuts. Well, I better not go there. I couldn't go there anyway. I've got so many vitamins in my system that if I ate a Dunkin' Donut, I don't know what would happen to me. I can't go there. And I keep working. Dunkin' Donut, half price sale. Cream filled. I can't have them, can't have them. Then all of a sudden, there's the shift. Who does the woman think she is? She wants to control every area of my life? I can't have my own thought? I was driving with her the other day, and I was going along, and I go, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. She said, what are you doing? I said, I'm having my own thought. I said, I just don't interrupt it for a minute. I'm enjoying myself. Well, who does a woman think she is? Is she that controlling? I can't even have my own thoughts. I can't even have a donut when I want a donut. I can't even eat a donut. A man can't live on vitamins alone. Blow it. I'm going. And I get to Dunkin' Donuts, and this is a bad sign. Hi, Mike. Yeah, we were hoping you made it home all right yesterday. I don't want one. I want a dozen. Half price. Give them to me. And I stuff them down. I'm mad the whole time. Then I get home at night. Betty says, you want the other piece of lettuce? No, no. The vitamins are just fine for me. Whenever you're in rebellion, you're in anger. Somehow you get yourself angry. And some of you have had this happen in your relationships where your behavior is predestined because the other person's in rebellion and they want to be angry. It doesn't matter what you do. It's predestined that it's going to make them mad. If you buy them flowers, you're manipulating. If you don't buy them flowers, you're manipulating. All behavior is predestined and predetermined. And so, I have a problem, whatever it is, in my flesh. I say the event is what caused it. That made me rebel and go into anger. But why did that event bother you? And it doesn't bother another person. There was a little girl, she wasn't a little girl, she was about 25, and she couldn't take her medication. Every time she would take the pill, her throat would swell shut. And so the doctors believed she was allergic to her medication. They shifted medication. They gave her a new medication. And when she'd take it, her throat would swell shut. Do you know it wasn't the pill that she was allergic to? It was the invisible message attached to the pill. Her grandmother had always told her that if you ever take a pill, you'll go to hell because it means you don't believe in Jesus. So it wasn't the pill she couldn't swallow, it was the message attached to the pill she couldn't swallow. In our relationships, there's certain behaviors that people have that have a message attached to it that's attached to us and for us, but not attached to them. And so they don't understand it. Have you ever asked yourself, why is that bothering me so much? And what we find then is that there's a problem in my past, with my identity. I came into the relationship feeling worthless, unacceptable, unlovable, and a failure, and any event that proves it strips away my success suit and leaves me naked. And all this is a way to cope with being naked. It's idolatry. So I'll give this example. Right now the soldiers come in, they line the room, they point their guns at everybody, they have you stand up, and they say to all of you here, everyone here, take off your clothes right now, and you have to walk home. It would be interesting to see the responses. Some people would just say, shoot me. Go ahead and shoot me. Just kill me. I'm not going to do it. Some people could get drunk, and it feels good not to have clothes. Some people take drugs. It's nice not to have clothes. Other people, if you looked at them, they would go into a rage, and you'd be afraid of them. Then you got the thinkers, and they would be plotting and planning, well, how will I get out of here? I've got to get into the bushes. I'll get into the bushes. I'll wait there till the night. When it's darker, I'll cross the street. I'll get across the street, and then I'll go. Then you've got the person that would do what I would do. I would just get depressed and just take off my clothes and just leave depressed. And I'd walk down the street. Well, I never deserved any clothes anyway. I'm surprised I had them as long as I did. And then somebody would drive along, hey, Mike, is that you? Yeah, yeah, I don't have no clothes either because I don't deserve any clothes. And I just go on. We're born dead to God, self-centered, insane. We let other people tell us who we were. We tried to cover it up with a success suit. Whenever an event comes along and undresses me, I go into rebellion and anger, and this is how I cope with life. Jesus didn't come to just get me free from hell in the future. He came to get me free from my daily hell. Would you agree with me that this is a daily hell to live like that? And what would happen if Christ came and he could get rid of my old identity and he could give me a new life, his life? Then the event wouldn't bother me. I wouldn't have to rebel. I wouldn't have to be angry. And I wouldn't have to have the problem. And that's what we're going to talk about, Christ becoming my life and changing everything, and how that works out in a practical way.